Hey there, Vermont Edition listeners. Hope you got a stack of pancakes because we have sugared off this episode until it's short and sweet. I'm Vermont Edition producer Andrea Lorien, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Here on the show, we love talking about food. And over the years I've been host, we have focused on a couple specific foods. Ice cream, bagels, bread making, pies, holiday baking, and fair food. Here's looking at you, fried burritos at the Champlain Valley Fair. Today, we are giving some love to one of our favorite wintry meals, soup. It's a seasonal favorite for sure, an easy way to use up ingredients or make a budget-friendly, hearty meal, and it features in the culinary traditions of cultures all around the globe. We're going to be collecting soup-making tips, favorite flavor combos, and recipe ideas on our website after today's show. Give us a call with your favorite soup recipe and maybe a memory that it conjures up. 800-639-2211 is our number. You can also send us an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Now, later in the show, we're going to be joined for our monthly food chat with the 7 Days food writer, Jordan Berry. She'll share her favorite restaurants where soup is on the menu and some food and drink-related gift ideas from 7 Days annual gift guide. But first, we are joined today by Joe Booley Jr. of East Montpelier. He's the chef and owner of Joe's Kitchen at Screamin' Ridge Farm. His soups and other products can be found at retailers in our region like the Hunger Mountain Co-op, Rutland Area Co-op, and Healthy Living. Joe, welcome.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our first annual, maybe, soup show. It feels like a big deal.
Well, soup should be a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us about Joe's Kitchen. What exactly do you all do there?
Well, obviously, we make soup. and we started out, it's hard to believe, about 17 years ago. I was looking at some numbers the other day, and we are currently making about 35 different soups on a rotating basis. And we've started adding in different types of macaroni and cheese, chicken pot pie filling, just expanding things, a little bit of grab and go. And it is our busy season because with cold weather, our sales almost triple for about 6 months.
Wow, they triple.
Yeah. Come springtime, things get kind of quiet, which is nice. I get to go fishing a little bit more.
Well, 35 recipes. We definitely want to hear a couple of those today. But first, before we go into your kitchen of today, bring us to the kitchen of the past. How did young Joe first get interested in cooking?
Well, my grandmother and also my mother are extremely good cooks, French Canadian. And my great grandmother, when I was really tiny, she only spoke Quebecois, and I just remember she always had this pot on the back of the stove bubbling away. And it was kind of a perpetual soup pot. And then growing up as a kid, my grandmother had a huge vegetable garden down in East Randolph. And if you wanted dinner, you know, during the summer months, you got to run out and pick fresh green beans and get corn right off the stalk. And she used to can her own chicken, put up a lot of vegetables, food prep. And then my mom kind of continued that tradition. In particular, I remember my mom simmering away smoked ham hocks and making really good split pea soup. And so kind of stuck with me. And somewhere along the way, I ended up going to France and went to culinary school and started running restaurants and now I own a soup company.
Funny where life takes you.
Oh, yeah. You know, sometimes you just go with the flow.
Well, you mentioned the long simmering soup pot. Does it depend on the type of soup you're making, how long you should simmer it for, or is it generally the longer the better?
Oh, for me, there is a difference. You make a fresh batch of soup, like we'll make a Thai carrot ginger soup, and it's a pretty quick soup. I think soups that need a little bit more time tend to have meat or broth in them, or let's say like a nice minestrone with lots of lentils and basil, or not lentils, but white beans. Mm. Letting that sit up for a day or so, actually, it's kind of like spaghetti sauce. It's better the next day sometimes. Same thing with the split pea soup.
Yeah, it takes a little time to get all of those flavors mixed together. Well, listeners, if we are piquing your interest with our soup talk and a recipe is coming to mind for you that you love, or maybe a childhood memory of eating a particularly comforting soup when you're sick or at home for the holidays, call in and tell us about it. 800-639-2211 is our number. You can also email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Joe, you said that your family has French-Canadian roots. How do some of those culinary traditions find their way into your cooking today?
The biggest one, I guess, and that's how I started the soup business, I left the restaurant business and got into vegetable farming. And it's being able to source, you know, the big thing these days is buying local. And the reality is it's nothing new. It's the way we used to eat before the 1970s or so. And when you're growing food, or your next door neighbor or the farmer down the road is growing the ingredients for you, they're just fresher. They've got more flavor. It's really true to this day with an ear of corn, like fresh summer corn. You want it picked that day because it starts to get really starchy the longer you keep it around. Mm. And I guess that tradition really sticks with me, is trying to stay local, trying to find good quality ingredients. It's what we do with our soups now. If you look at the ingredient, I had a customer email me just the other day that she wanted to make sure that my heavy cream was only heavy cream and it didn't have seaweed or guar gum in it. And I was like, no, it's Monument Dairy and the only ingredient is cream.
Wait. Does cream sometimes have seaweed in it?
Oh, yeah. Look at the back of the carton. Sure. Guar gum or xanthan gum. And I'm trying to remember what the industry name is for seaweed, agar. It'll have agar in it.
Wow.
And it's plant-based and it's natural, but I don't know. Cream is cream. Doesn't need seaweed in it.
I guess not. Well, the more you know. That's great. So let's share one of your favorite soup recipes, or just general like soup ideas that you have been serving up through Joe's Kitchen recently. What's a recipe that comes to mind?
Oh, we have five or six that I guess are our best sellers, but we do a really nice chicken ginger vegetable. Mm. We use Misty Knoll chicken. Lots of zucchini, carrots, caramelized onions. We make our own chicken broth, our own stocks, so we don't buy stuff in for that. It's the same with our beef stock. We make our own vegetable stock. And then the nice part about the ginger chicken for me is that it actually has a quantity of ginger in it that you can really taste. It really pops. So for 40 gallons of ginger chicken soup, that's the size of batch we run, we'll have 6 pounds of fresh ginger added into it.
Wow.
And left in the soup. And then we'll balance it a little bit with fresh lime and lemon juice. And the real trick is to include the zest, not just the juice, because the essential oils, the real flavor of citrus is in the skin, in the essential oils. Mm. And so that's a nice trick. It'll make things just like, oh, I can actually taste the citrus and the ginger.
Okay, that's good to know, because sometimes I will admit when I see zest in a recipe, I'm like, do I really need to zest? And sometimes I don't. Oh, but it's good to know. It makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
Okay. And you also mentioned ginger. This is a ingredient I have a question about. I have heard different things about whether or not you need to peel ginger. What do you think?
We peel it because it's so, it's just unpleasant to eat. And so we cheat a little bit because what we do, and actually people can do this at home, it's pretty simple, is run the ginger through a Roboco and slice it with the slicing blade pretty thin. And then if you've got a blender or a handheld immersion blender, put the ginger in there, cover it with a little water and puree it, and make sure you've got some extra water, and then set it in the fridge overnight, and all the skin floats to the top. And then you can just skim the skin off, and all you're left with is ginger-flavored water and the actual pulp, the puree.
Oh.
It's a cosmetic thing, and it's not nice to eat the skin. It's just really fibrous, and it has no flavor.
Mm. Wow, well, good to know. I love that tip. Let's go to the phones. We have Joanne calling in from Newberry. Joanne, go ahead.
Hi, Michaela. Nice to speak with you again. I want to thank your guest for his ginger tip, because I'm a huge fan of ginger as well. I grew up in a French, half Portuguese family, and my mom's favorite soup was make it from scratch as a child. And even when she was quite ill near the end of her life and going through chemo treatment, that was the one thing that she would still eat, was her split pea soup.
Split pea soup.
The other side of the family, the other side of the family is Portuguese, and think about spices, and we grew up on the Cape, and as a small child with my grandmother, making Portuguese kale soup with charisse and linguiça, and making sure it was spicy enough, and that's a really fantastic experience.
Oh, Joanne, thank you so much for sharing those two soups with us. Joe, are you a fan of Portuguese soup with the chorizo or other sausage?
The one that Joanne's describing is actually a classic. It's really popular. Shredded braised kale, and then really good chorizo, which is a spicy pork sausage. You take it off out of the casing and saute that in. You don't take any of the oil out, and a lot of times you'll add onions, potatoes. It's just a really hearty, really tasty soup. Mm.
Joe, I feel like one of the things that is lovable about soup is that it is harder than some other types of meals to mess up. It's a bit forgiving. There's still a difference between a good soup and a great soup. But, you got a little bit of leeway. But I certainly have had some major soup making fails. And I'm wondering if you have, too.
Oh, we've always had... you always have a failure. I mean, it's about experimenting and trying, and not everything works. And it's kind of funny that because we'll frequently here in our kitchen, we'll be making a batch of soup, and it's the same way we've been making that soup for 10 years. And all of a sudden, one of us will make a mistake following the recipe, and it's like, oh, wait a minute, that's better. Let's change the recipe.
A happy accident.
It is. And, it's unintentional. But if you're at home cooking, it's always fun. You decide you want soup. And we still do this at my house. And my daughters, who have grown up and are starting their own lives, I hear them doing the same thing. It's you'll get home and you open the fridge and it's like, okay, I'm making soup. What have I got? And you start grabbing the different odds and ends and throw them in a pot and see what you come up with. It all starts with an idea. And sometimes the idea is awesome. It's what we call a keeper, or it's not a keeper. We got to go back to the drawing board on that one.
Joe, do you have a favorite soup for using up those vegetables in the fridge that are starting to look a little funky?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can. Lentils, any kind of bean is awesome as a base. Or you can use rice, potatoes, and then start chopping your vegetables and get them to a size you like. I always shoot for, I look at the size of somebody's, the spoon that you're going to eat the soup with, and everything that goes into the soup should fit on the spoon, so you get a little bit in every bite. Mm. And, you know, start sauteing your vegetables, use a little olive oil. Some people like to use butter. Caramelize them, get a little bit of, you know, brown them a little bit because it adds flavor. And then, you know, start, you can use just water and then go with dried herbs, fresh herbs, add a little bit of garlic and build something and then let it simmer. And I always keep a tube of tomato paste in the refrigerator door and a little bit of tomato at the end. I'll frequently kind of bring everything, you know, together for you.
I always have trouble figuring out what recipe I want to cook, like landing on a decision. I really like the idea of working backwards from what is the size of the utensil I want to use that day and then figuring out the recipe from there. Let's bring in another caller. We have Peter in Burlington on the air. Peter, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I would like to share this recipe for, it's technically a Mexican stew, but you could lean it out with broth to make it a soup. And it, to me, I'm going to make it tonight. It said 2 cans of pinto beans drained, a can of Rotel tomatoes and chilies, a small can of chopped green chilies, onions and garlic, of course, and I think about a quart of broth. And then you just cook that down until it's thick or not so thick to make it a soup. And then serve it with some fresh cilantro on top. And I guarantee you will be styling.
That sounds delicious, Peter. I also love all the variety of culinary traditions we've hit on so far with this show, from Mexican-inspired soup to Portuguese to French-Canadian to traditional American. Well, let's bring in some more guests now from southern Vermont. We have with us Caroline Hannon, the organizer of Queer Soup Night in Brattleboro. Caroline, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, we're also joined by your partner in crime, Bex Slatterly, a Putney-based chef who makes the soups for Queer Soup Night. Hey, Bex.
Hello.
Caroline, tell us about what Queer Soup Night is. What's the mission?
So it is not too far off from the name. It's just an opportunity to gather queer community together in a cozy space or outdoors, wherever feels good in the season, and come together, have soups, and raise money for a local queer organization.
And how often do you all meet up?
So it depends on the chapter. There are chapters in a lot of the major cities in the country, and Brattleboro's chapter just started this summer. So we've had two so far. We had one in June for Pride Month, and we just had another one in November. And we are working on finding sponsors so we can have them more often, financial sponsors. So we are hoping to have one in the next few months.
Awesome. Yeah. And Bex, you make the soups for Queer Soup Night. Could you share a recipe that you used for this latest event in November?
Certainly. We did two soups, and one of them was black bean and coconut soup, which was a gluten-free and vegan option. It was a pureed soup that we served with lime and sour cream on top.
Oh, that sounds delicious. How do you decide on the soups that you're going to make for a big group? Are you thinking like local ingredients or the types of flavors you're excited about experimenting with at that time of year?
This time I really was excited about the idea of having a lot of toppings. I don't know why that was what I wanted, but the idea of the table full of the two soup options and then choosing your own adventure for what you put on top. So we did a baked potato soup with it, and there was fried potato skins and cheese and sour cream and green onions. And I like when people can choose what to add to it.
That sounds fun. That's like a way to make it a more communal experience and probably fun for kids too.
Definitely. I think whenever there's lots of little bowls in a meal where you can personalize it, I think it's more enjoyable.
Yeah. And Caroline, one of the goals of Queer Soup Night, if I understand correctly, is to also have a space for folks with families to get together too and to fill that kind of social space.
Yeah, totally. You know, in our town, there are infrequent events for queer community. And more often, I would say they're, basically for adults. Like the queer dance party is a great one that happens every month. That is a regular one. But otherwise, the events are pretty infrequent around here. And so we're trying to offer something on a, you know, hopefully soon we'll be on a regular basis, that is very welcoming and open to families, especially in our community. There's a lot of queer families and it's incredible. And there's lots of meetups of queer families throughout the different towns in this region. And we're, wanting to offer a space that can hold all of the different towns and all of the families all together. And we recently were able to do that at the new North Barn at Retreat Farm. It was a really beautiful event. It's a very big venue space. It's like basically going to be the new wedding venue of this town. And it's a beautiful barn and was able to accommodate at least 100 people. It could certainly accommodate more. And yeah, it was a really successful, beautiful event. And yes, and part of the goal as well being the fundraising piece so we can be also, you know, contributing back to the community, kind of a full, you know, circle kind of event.
Mm. And if you heard kids in the background just now, both Caroline and Bex work at a school down there. So it's the middle of the school day. We'll get you back to that work in just a moment. But before I let you go, Bex, sometimes my producer will write me notes based on conversations that she had with a guest before our show. And there's this one note about you that I was like, I have to ask Bex about this. It says, you previously cooked for sailors. Ask Bex about that. Tell me about cooking for sailors. What was that job?
I was a student first on a research vessel, Sea Education Association, and I then became the cook. And I would sail for 6 weeks at a time, feeding 30 to 40 people, two boats in each ocean, and we'd sail all over the place. So I started cooking out for large quantities of very hungry people.
And I bet soup was a good thing to serve for that many hungry people.
I mean, soup is perfect to serve. You can thin it out. You can make it out of anything. I feel like soup is ideal for large groups of people.
Bex Slatterly and Caroline Hannon of Queer Soup Night in Brattleboro. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thanks so much
for having us.
And we still have on the line Joe Booley Jr., the owner of Joe's Kitchen at Screamin' Ridge Farm in East Montpelier. Joe, thinking about soups that have lots of opportunities for toppings, I feel like that's a really fun family idea. Do you have any recipes that come to mind if somebody wants to create like soup plus toppings bar set up for their next big meal?
Oh, well, I guess the most popular, the easiest one for me is chili.
Yeah.
Beef or vegan. We make both. And there's just so many easy things you can do with it. serve it over, put some crushed up tortillas in the bottom of the bowl, and then scallions and cilantro and fresh salsa, tomatoes, cheddar cheese, bacon bits. You can kind of go on and on with that. Some fun, not so common toppings are like getting fresh shallots and slicing them really thin and dusting them with a little bit of flour and then pan frying them until they're really crisp and making crunchy, tiny little onion rings. And you sprinkle those on top of the soup. But I guess the easiest goodies I could recommend are just chopped fresh herbs of almost any kind. And then your favorite cheese, Parmesan, cheddar, Emmental, anything that you particularly like just over the top. You'd be surprised. It'll go with almost anything.
Tiny onion rings made from shallots. That's such a great idea. Yeah. I'm going to have to try that. Well, if you have a soup recipe you'd like to share, you can still call in at 800-639-2211. We have David on the line from Bristol. David, go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. What are your soup thoughts, David?
Well, I got to pull off the road because I'm breaking the law.
Oh, boy.
But I won't be for long.
Vermont Edition does not condone this activity. We are not liable.
Right. Yeah. You probably wouldn't condone my, Joe wouldn't, perhaps, my jambalaya.
Ooh, tell us about it.
It's the only thing that I make when I have a gathering of friends and family, if I make anything at all.
What goes in it?
Jambalaya. I'm locally known for it, I think, among my friends.
What do you put in it?
Anything. That's what's so wonderful about it. One trip to Costco and I got jambalaya for a month.
All right. This is a mysterious but intriguing recipe, David. I'm gonna go back to our guest to talk to us about maybe some more traditional jambalaya ingredients. Joe, what can you tell us?
Well, first off, you want to make your roux, which, you know, if you're down in Louisiana, it's depends on the type of fat you use, but usually a lot of butter, and you throw your flour in, and then you're trying to let that flour get a little bit brown. Some people will make a really dark roux, and that's your thickening agent. That's what kind of turns it into a stew for you. And then a lot of people will add sausage, shrimp, crayfish. And if you can find it, the really unique ingredient you want is sassafras.
Ooh.
It's what goes into a lot of jambalaya. It's a local, very local ingredient that's tough to find way up here.
Yeah, I grew up in Virginia, and there was sassafras everywhere.
Yeah, it's actually a spice. They'll use it in that. I cheat a little bit, and I'll use a pinch of saffron, which will come close, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah. David, I got to go back to you. I'm still really intrigued by your jambalaya recipe with all you've told me so far is that you go to Costco and you put anything in it. Did any of the ingredients that Joe just brought up trigger any specific necessary jambalaya ingredients for you?
Well, first of all, the roux, which I tried a time or two at the beginning, was way too difficult for my kind of jambalaya cooking. So I do not do the roux.
Okay, no roux.
I find that it depends on who is going to be eating it, how spicy I make it, how much red pepper goes in or doesn't. Often, if it's a larger group, somebody is allergic to shrimp, but if they aren't, that's a key ingredient, along with a hot sausage. Chicken, usually left over, dark meat, white meat, doesn't matter. And sometimes if I've got ham laying around, I chop up some of that. And I just find that for different occasions, different combinations of these things work pretty well.
Mm. That sounds very hearty, David. Well, thank you so much for calling in and triggering this conversation about jambalaya, one of my favorite soups. Joe, hearing David list off all those different meats made me think that there might be a lot of folks in our region who have deer meat in their fridge or freezer right now. Do you have a soup recommendation for somebody who wants to use some of that deer meat in a soup or stew?
Sure. We used to make venison stew, and I know a lot of the hunters now, at least I used to. I don't hunt much anymore, but the back strap you keep for yourself. That's the equivalent of a tenderloin. And then a lot of it is typically ground because deer are very lean and a lot of muscle. And so they'll grind it. And so take your venison, sear it, brown it, get a little bit of color on it. And then if you want from there, it's add root vegetables, you know, so carrots, turnips, parsnips, some potatoes, pour in a little bit of red wine, and that's acidic. It'll help tenderize the meat a little bit. And if you want, a pinch of flour to thicken it up a touch, and let it simmer away until it's ready to go. And it's a quick, easy stew, and then you can add a lot of herbs to it. Black pepper's nice. And a good piece of crusty bread.
Yes. That is the element we haven't talked about yet. What a key part of a delicious soup or stew is the crusty bread that goes alongside. Joe Bully Jr. is the owner of Joe's Kitchen at Screamin' Ridge Farm in East Montpelier. You can find his soups and other products at a number of retailers across our region. Joe, thanks so much for talking soup with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me out. Hopefully we've created a few new soup makers today.
I hope so too. And we'll end with an email that we received from Mark, who writes, "Nothing beats a nice creamy bowl of corn chowder, corn potatoes, and a generous amount of bacon. Best when it's snowing." Well, we will collect some of these recipes and tips and share them out on our website on vermontpublic.org after today's show. It's time for our monthly food segment with 7 Days. And joining us today is Jordan Berry, a 7 Days food writer who's coming to us from Addison County. Jordan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Okay. So we just had a extensive, in-depth look at soup culture in our region. And from what I can tell, it is flourishing.
Absolutely.
I mean, wow. Do you have any favorite soup recipes, either ones you make at home or places you like to go to get soup?
This might be a hot take, but I am a split pea soup person since a very early age.
Okay.
Like, too young to like split pea soup. There was a place, it's, I think, long closed, but just across the border from southern Vermont, called the Log Cabin in Shushan, New York, that we would go, and it was the only thing. I wouldn't even look at a menu.
Really?
I would insist on ordering split pea soup, and that's all I would have, and I would be happy as a clam. So that stuck with me my whole life, and I'm not sure anyone else in my family likes it, but, you know, when it's on the menu, I'll order it.
Are you a split pea soup with the ham hock or without kind of person?
Either way.
Yeah.
You know, however they think it should be served is how I'll take it.
do you have another, like, any other restaurants maybe in the northern part of the state where we're living now, or if you're like really craving that like warm, cozy, soupy, stewy vibe, you'd go there? I'm thinking right now of Zabby and Elves.
Oh, yes.
In Burlington.
Yes.
Just the coziest restaurant I know.
I went in the other day and didn't get soup. I got the challah and then made French toast all weekend. But perfect soup accompaniment if that's what you're looking for too. And this morning I was at Misery Loves Company in Winooski when I was running errands. I mentioned to you before the show, I almost got matzo ball soup, but I figured it would be really hard to eat in the car. So I did my Christmas shopping there and then went down the street to Morning Light Bakery for some pork floss rolls instead, which I think would also go great with soup. Just rip them open, dip it in. You know?
Such a good idea.
You don't have to go to one place to get your soup. You can get your accompaniment somewhere else.
I love that idea. Well, listeners, if you have been to a restaurant recently that you loved, it doesn't have to have been for soup. It could have been for anything. And you want to give them a little shout out on air, you can call in at 800-639-2211 or email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Jordan, the 7 days annual gift guide is coming out. It's already out. It is out.
It's been out for a few weeks.
I knew that.
Kind of hides on our website, I think. But there's a beautiful print insert as well, if you can find those next to the paper stacks. I think there's still some out there.
And you contributed.
Yes, we get to do a food and drink section every year. And these are all gifts that our staff members kind of suggest throughout the year. And they're curated in a way that sometimes I send in really oddball ideas and I don't think they're going to make it. And one did this year.
What?
The Cafe Hot's chicken fried egg sliders, which... You know, yeah, I'm seeing
delicious.
Your face. Delicious.
No, I've been there. I love them.
Kind of a random thing to like wrap up and give to someone for the holidays.
Yeah.
But my pitch for it was that you open it and then there's breakfast. You can just, they sell them in City Market, both locations. And
okay, so it is packaged.
Yes, they have a packaged
version. You're not just
version.
Like wrap a sandwich.
Not a sandwich. I don't think they'll be open that day. Okay. But you can get them ahead of time. And both locations of City Market and Always Full Asian Market downtown. Mm-hmm. And I think they're also starting to ship them, which is very exciting. So if you're not listening from the immediate Chittenden County area, you could get some chicken fried egg sliders. And there's no chicken. Their whole thing is
there. Yeah, describe what they are.
Yeah.
They're delicious, but if you hear it for the first time, you're like, what is that?
Yes, it's a lot of like, is this a chicken or egg situation, but like with what you're eating. Cafe Hot is a no-kill restaurant, so everything is vegetarian, and they basically give scrambled eggs the chicken fried steak treatment. So it's like this crispy, crunchy, just absolutely amazing piece of egg that you could do whatever you want with for breakfast. You could probably put it in soup too if you really got creative.
Oh, I bet that would be good.
Yeah. Or at least
or like a ramen. Think about that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you had a couple different recommendations, not just wrapped food for the food and drink guide. One thing that stuck out to me, there's something called mermaid dust.
Yes.
Dust, excuse me. Yes. What is that?
Morrisville-based Wolf Peach, which is, I would call it like an alchemist or, you know, maker of beautiful and delicious edible things that you don't really know you need, but you kind of do. There's a like an oxymel tonic that she makes that is like just tastes like summer and sunshine in a bottle. But the mermaid dust is a bright pink aromatic salt.
Oh.
So it is a great way to jazz up pretty much anything because it gives it a little seasoning and flavor. There's like local flowers and herbs in it, but it's also like hot pink. So it looks really fun too. And it's a nice, like cute little jar that would be very giftable. Total favorite of mine. I've got mermaid dust, and I think she makes a pirate dust too, which is just a
what
different.
What color is that?
It's like a greeny blue.
Ooh. Very cool. I love these ideas. And I also thought for the folks who are into a more maybe traditional gift for the kitchen, I saw you recommended some knives.
Oh, yes. I got to do a very cool Q&A with a local chef turned knife maker. He left the restaurant industry a few years ago and now handcrafts beautiful chef's knives in his Moncton garage, which he's turned into a forge. Naren M. Knives is the brand. It's Naren McDonald. And we talked about, you know, what makes a good knife, how he approaches every little design detail with that kind of like chef experience of like, if you hold a knife this way, you want this edge to be rounded so it doesn't dig into your hand when you're chopping 4,000 carrots or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But he also had really good tips for taking care of your knives. So if you give someone like a stunning handmade chef's knife, which is like not a cheap gift to give. You want to make sure that they know how to take care of it. Yeah, absolutely. And his two like best pieces of advice, which he said were hot takes, but I think they're just good advice, was that bamboo cutting boards, like as sustainable and wonderful as they are marketed as being, are absolutely terrible for your knives.
I've heard this.
Yeah. And he recommended wood, so a nice local wood cutting board could be a good thing to pair with it. And also just like, please never put them in the dishwasher. Hand wash them right away, dry them, and put them back where they go in a nice, safe place. Mm. So,
on that note, I feel like giving somebody the gift of getting their knives sharpened for them is like the greatest gift of all for a home cook. I finally took, there's this guy who lives in my neighborhood who sharpens knives, and he writes about it on Front Porch Forum every couple months. And I finally was like, I'm just going to do it. And like, I feel like my life is completely different. I also got my bread knife sharpened, which like whoever sharpens their bread knife. Yeah. I know. It's a whole new world. Crusty bread is no feat. All right, let's go to the phones. I'll stop talking about knives. Jim in Tunbridge is on the line. Jim, do you have a restaurant recommendation for us?
Hey now, I've got a couple. One in the Upper Valley in my neck of the woods is Red Can. It's from the Worthy Kitchen, Worthy Burger Crew, a bit more fine dining spot with a wonderful raw bar and great cocktails made by one of my favorite bartenders in Vermont, Patty. And then there's this cute little, don't tell anybody, speakeasy in the back. And then the other one, I think no segment would be complete about talking about restaurants in Vermont without mentioning Frankie's in Burlington. I think it's hands down the best food in Vermont. A bunch of old Hen of the Wood crew putting down excellent food. I always like to think of it as like Hen's little seafaring light sister. And it's so good. The drinks are great. Max, Woody, and Lauren on the bar are just a real treat. Cindy in the front running the whole thing. Those are two of my like standouts for anyone to go to. I recommend them all the time.
Awesome. Jim and Tunbridge recommending Red Can in the Upper Valley and Frankie's in Burlington. Jordan, have you been to Frankie's yet? I feel like everyone I know is talking about it. I haven't been.
I have. I got to go and do a nice story about it not long after they opened, and I ate in their group fine dining, like party room is what they called it, which is sort of the upstairs. This is the old Pennycluse on Cherry Street in Burlington. And you would recognize it from like the shape of the building when you go inside, but it is so chic. The bar, sitting at the bar with those incredible bartenders, it's like this magical swirling stone that Cindy, one of the co-owners, said she was like very inspired by the lake when she picked out the stone. And you totally get that. It is... Spoiler alert, Melissa Passon and I have our best fights of the year coming out in our next week's issue of 7 Days. And we fought over who got to write about Frankie's and also what dish we were going to pick for the best bite of the year. And it was sort of like, well, here's maybe 10 of them. And I guess you could try whatever they have on the menu. It's an incredible place. They have already gotten national press, one of Eater's 14 best new restaurants in the U.S.
Wow.
Which is a pretty big deal that Vermont is on the radar of a national food publication. So, very proud.
All right, I got to get in there. Sounds so good. All right, let's shift gears a little bit. Talk about the world of wine. Mm. I think the last time you talked, or I talked with Melissa Passanen, Daedalus was just closing. That's a pretty beloved wine store, restaurant in Burlington. Any good news from the world of wine?
Oh, I am so excited. So, actually, this brings it back to our gifting ideas. I have joked that living in Virgins, all I want as a gift is a wine bar that I can walk to. And I got one.
Oh,
yes.
Wow. Yes. Good work putting that out in the universe.
I know. Camilla Carrillo from La Montanuela, who is, she works with Lagerregista, which is like icon of Vermont wine, but has her own brand. And she and her husband, Nathan Diversa, have opened a wine bar / furniture showroom right in downtown Virgins. It is stunning. It is so beautiful in there. All of Nathan's furniture and Cammie's wines are just some of my favorites. She does kind of a sherry-style oxidative wine that I've been on a sherry kick, and having a local version of it is just so cool. She's so fun to sit at the bar and chat with. And she's got not just her own wines, but other Vermont wines, ciders and co-ferments from Canada, Japanese natural wine, a little bit of beer, a little bit of NA stuff. Just a great place to go hang out. So that's a really bright spot, I think, for the Vermont wine scene. And Lagerregista, Domaine Lagerregista, they're based in Barnard, but they farm vineyards all over the state. And they recently opened a pop-up tasting room in their West Addison at their vineyard house. It's sort of like in the former two-car garage, which is very unassuming when you pull up to it. But they have such a way of turning a space into something really magical. And it totally fits the magic of that vineyard, which is like full of wildflowers in the summer. And they're going to do their next pop-up on Sunday, December 29th. So a great place to get out there.
Yeah, some good Addison County spots to visit. And what about restaurant news? Any openings that you're excited about?
Yes, I am waiting with bated breath for Chenille Farron's Things from Yod Kitchen, which is taking over the Donwari Korean space in South Burlington. Donwari's moving to Winooski, and Chenille's been doing pop-ups. She used to serve her Jamaican food out of a old cafeteria kitchen in Colchester, but she's at events all around the state, and she's going to have her first like brick and mortar, and her jerk corn, which is like corn on the cob slathered in jerk aioli and rolled in toasted coconut.
Wow.
That's on my year-end list too. So
that sounds delicious.
Yeah, she told me she's hoping to be open by the end of the month. And then a couple places that are open that I'm going to hit now that I am on vacation for the end of the year. Oh, sorry to rub it in.
That's fine.
I really want to go to Howl Beer in Winooski. Which
I just
is,
went.
Oh, yay. How
it's
was
great.
It?
It's great. Cool. The ambiance is awesome. Yeah. It's really lovely in there.
They're super inspired by European beer culture, and it's like very lager focused, which I think is unusual in Vermont, where we get like a lot of IPAs. So kind of a different beer list.
I got an IPA.
Oh, you did?
I'm a monster.
One thing that's cool that they're doing is they're working with local breweries to kind of follow their own recipes and brew special batches of beer. So I'm excited to check that out. And Fig Cocktail Bar, which is part of Mirror Mirror, which stay with me here for a second.
Okay.
Mirror Mirror is a beauty shop and spa, day spa. Mm-hmm. In Burlington, and they have one in Stowe, which for a few years they've also run a cocktail bar kind of in the same space. And it seems a little strange at first.
No, that I feel like that's such a smart pairing.
It makes so much sense if you want to go get a facial, have a little cocktail first. So they've sort of recreated that in the old Peg and Tear space on Shelburne Road or Route 7 in Shelburne. It's a beauty store on the right when you walk in the old lobby, and then the bar is still a bar. Great looking cocktails. That seems like they're expanding their food menu too. So I'm really excited to check that out.
That is a really good holiday gift idea too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And even though if you go buy some things for someone else, then you can get yourself a cocktail while you a little treat for doing the shopping.
Exactly. I like how you think, Jordan. Okay. I know you have many more suggestions, but you can find them all in 7 Days annual gift guide and in upcoming issues of 7J's. Jordan Berry, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now I'm very hungry. All right. That is all the time that we have for today's show. I do want to remind you, though, that tomorrow, even though it's Friday, we have a very special Vermont edition. It's one of my favorite annual traditions we do here. It is our annual 2-hour music show. We're going to be sharing songs that have meant the most to us and to you over the past year. Some are old songs, some are new. That's from 12 to 2 tomorrow at noon, and there is no rebroadcast, so be sure to listen in live, and you can call in and tell us about your favorite song of the past year or a song that just meant a lot to you in 2024. Today's show was directed by Liz Fullerton. Our managing producer is John Ahrens, and our show is produced by Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro. Our call screener today was Rick Barrett, and our theme music is by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch up again soon.